hello, hello, and thank you for tuning in to episode 15 of Oops All Ducks. 15 already. So today we're trying a couple of things. I've had a few responses on the cast. I've had a couple of people talking to me back and forth about what kind of is being thought, what should be done different, or what should stay the same. The consensus that I'm getting is that the show is at least entertaining, so hooray. But then also that the worry is that focusing too heavily on things that other podcasts focus on might detract from the value of this podcast. And I know the podcast is called Oops All Ducks, and the idea of it is that every week I go over a deck, and I talk about it, I go over the cards, and I talk about what, you know, how it works, basically. And there's so many decks out there that does. It makes for basically, not an infinite amount, but essentially an infinite amount of podcast episodes that I can make. Some will be more interesting than others to certain people. But what I'm getting is that, you know, there are so many other podcasts out there that do news, and that they talk about the tournaments and the tournament, results. And that me going over a lot of that news and a lot of that tournament result stuff might not be the best thing to do, just because there's so many other casts that do it. I understand that. That makes sense. I still am going to talk about news. I'm still going to talk about all Magic-related things because, you know, that's half the reason this podcast is here. I like to talk about it. I have opinions on stuff. If it's a podcast you're listening to, you know, maybe you'll get another point of view on something, or maybe just it'll just drive it home. Hey, this is when the release date is for this, or, you know, whatever. But so there's that. And I understand the whole tournament thing because I don't have that much to say about the tournaments. And I haven't really gone over them in the last 14 episodes. What I'm going to do is I'm going to try this. I'm just going to basically list the top eight decks in the Standard, Modern, and Legacy SCG opens. Whenever there is one, like say there was one on the weekend, I'll just go over the deck, not the deck lists, just the decks. So, I mean, and it is relevant because, as I said, this is a deck podcast where I talk about a deck every week. So I figure, you know, it is relevant because if you look at the Modern top eight, a lot of the decks that are on there I have gone over in the past. So it's nice to be able to put, you know, hey, you know, this is actually a relevant deck, or hey, you know, this deck was in the top eight, and that's funny because this is one that I'm going to talk about. Here's why it's such a competitive deck. You know, I'm not going to sit there and pick apart every single one of them. I'm just going to basically say what they are, and maybe just comment on, hey, you know, this is a new one. I haven't been seeing this up here lately. This is really starting to come out. Standard has changed. This is what Standard looks like now. I'm not going to spend, you know, an hour talking about these tournaments at all. That is not my want to do. What I want to do is maybe take 5 minutes and just talk about what the decks are that are in the top eight. So I just wanted to kind of preface this episode a little bit before I went into it. Another thing that was brought up to me was that it might be a good idea to put the deck on the front of the podcast instead of having it nearer to the end. And at first I thought, well, you know, I don't know. But then, you know, as I kind of thought about it a little bit longer, just as the day went on, I realized, well, you know, some people might just be tuning in because, hey, they want to hear about this deck, and that's fine. If they decide afterwards to tune in to the news and to, you know, the card mashup and everything like that, then that's fine too. If they find me entertaining and want to tune in, great, I've done my job. But, you know, if not, the deck's on the front, and then if you want to listen to it and then tune out afterwards, I guess, you know, that's your choice. I'd like it if you stuck around, because I do have stuff I like to talk about, and I figure, hey, you know, why not share it? Plus, if you only stick around for the deck portion, you're only going to be listening to the podcast for, you know, about a half an hour, depending on the deck, could be longer. Sometimes I'll go over more variations of the deck, so it might be like 45 minutes, but that's like the top, that's like top end of it. So you're not going to get a lot of content just out of listening to the deck. So that's why. And I did have another suggestion too, that I should just, if I want to put myself out there just to people who just want to hear about the decks, just talk about decks and that's it. And, you know, that's understandable too. The only problem there is, again, not a whole lot of content. Not a whole lot of content at all. Like, the episodes would not be much longer than half an hour to 45 minutes. And then, you know, it's a download that, you know, essentially was a waste of time. Not saying that podcasts under that amount of time are a waste of time. Not at all what I'm saying. But I just feel like one deck review and one overview of the deck is not enough content to fill a podcast. So I'm going to continue doing the news. I'm going to try just looking at the top eights of the Modern, Legacy, and Standard opens. And again, there's only like a couple a week, if that. So, you know, that's not going to, it's again, it's only like 5 minutes that I'm going to talk about them, and they're relevant, you know, but I'm not going to delve too deeply into them. And I'm going to keep reporting the news because, you know, the news that's interesting to me anyways. Because I like doing it, and, from what I'm hearing, it's at least somewhat fun to listen to. But anyways, I've been dragging on way too long. Let's move on. I'm gonna move into, I guess, we're gonna move into the deck right away. So we'll go through the deck, and then I've got a bunch of stuff to talk about afterwards. And then we're gonna go through the mashup, and then we're gonna go for the question of the week. I have replaced the card of the week with the question of the week. Instead of just picking a card and talking random nonsense about it, I'm gonna ask a question, put one out there, I'll kinda say my piece on it, and then if you've got anything to add, you can hit me up, all the ways that you know that you can hit me up, and all the contact information will come afterwards. So, without further ado, we're gonna move on, and the deck this week that we're gonna go over is White-Green Enchantment Hexproof, and it's actually a modern version of this deck. So that's the deck we're going through.
In this deck, it really is pretty simple. There are a lot of variations of it. I'm going to look at one on deckbox.org and just kind of see kind of what the differences are between the one here and the one on the one that won the top eight. Well, it didn't win. It top eighted at the Standard Open. So let's see here. Basically, the idea of this deck, as I'm sure you can figure, it's white-green enchantments. And it's actually usually called white-green aura enchantments. Or aura hexproof, sorry. Aura hexproof, not enchantments. So the idea is, let me give you a little bit of a backstory here. Before Hexproof, there was Shroud. Before Shroud, there was not Shroud. Shroud was basically the first thing that said, it can't be the target of anything. Well, it was a keyword. There were cards before that said, cannot be the target of spells or, you know, anything, really. And it would say it on the card. And there were actually some cards that said, cannot be the target of spells or abilities your opponents control. So there were words on cards for both of these mechanics. But Shroud was the first one that was given an actual keyword. And I think the reason for it is because, well, they wanted it to be balanced. They didn't want it to be too powerful like Hexproof is. Shroud basically said, hey, this creature can't really be dealt with unless it's not specifically, you know, unless the card that can kill it isn't targeting it specifically. You know, it has to be a card that says something like, restart the game, all creatures, blah, 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 blah. So Shroud, it hurts you and it hurts them because you can't target it with pumps or with auras or with equipments or anything. It's just a creature that sits there and does stuff. And the tricky part is, if you give it Shroud, it can't be the target afterwards. So there's equipment out there that gives creatures Shroud. So you put the equipment on there, as soon as it's on there, you cannot target them, even if it's a positive thing. And I think that's why they were kind of trying to get away from it. That's why they came out with Hexproof. Now, ever since Hexproof has come out, Shroud is no longer around. And what Hexproof is it basically says, this creature can't be the target of spells or abilities your opponents control. And there were a lot of creatures in the past that had this. There was can't remember what it was called, it was a wolf that had this. That was the most common. The other most common, it was Slippery Boggle, I think, were the most used cards that had this ability. And they finally gave it a name. They called it Hexproof, which is good because it's being used a lot. And Hexproof is an unfair ability because it does not let your opponent do anything about it. Basically, what they can do is try to win first. And that's about it. Now, there are some cards out there now, like Glaring Spotlight, that deal with Hexproof. They basically say creatures your opponents have that have Hexproof no longer have it. And that's cool. But those have only just started coming out. And, you know, they're not... I mean, they are slightly viable strategies to host a Hexproof deck. But, I mean, just taking away Hexproof is not enough. You have to also have something to destroy them. So you have to first do Hexproof removal, and then you have to have something that kills it. So it's not an easy thing to hose. I mean, unless you have, like, a board wipe, which, you know, is fine. Like, if you used one of those Glaring Spotlights, everything no longer has Hexproof, and then you, you know, Supreme Verdict everything. You know, cool. You just killed everything, and now their deck is pretty much done. But that's two cards you gotta do. So, I mean, while it is possible to hose a Hexproof deck now, it is still, it's gonna take some work. So, what this deck is, and basically I'm gonna go over the creatures first, and then I'll go through the enchantments. The idea of the deck is to just play really super cheap Hexproof cards, you know, creatures that are just like 1/1s or, you know, just 1/1s with Hexproof basically. And then you just keep playing and you just draw enchantments. You enchant your creature and then boom, you just keep attacking and attacking and attacking until you finally win. And that's literally like the strategy. But, you know, it's a good one. It's a legitimate one. So the creatures are Slippery Boggle, Slippery Boggle and Glade Cover Scout in this deck. Oh, and Core Spirit Dancer. And these are all 4/4s. Slippery Boggle, it costs 1 hybrid green-blue. It's a 1/1. And it says Slippery Boggle can't be target of spells or abilities your opponents control. So it has Hexproof. That's its Oracle text is that it has Hexproof. And it's a 1/1, as I said. Glade Cover Scout is exactly the same, except it just costs 1 green. And it's just an elf that costs 1 green, has Hexproof, it's a 1/1. Okay, so you have 8 creatures in your deck that have Hexproof. Now, Core Spirit Dancer does not technically have Hexproof. Well, there's no technically about it. It just doesn't have Hexproof. It costs 1 and a white. It's a core wizard. It's a rare. It's a 0/2. And it says Core Spirit Dancer gets +2/+2 for each aura attached to it. Whenever you cast an aura spell, you may draw a card. Whenever you cast one. Not whenever it resolves, not whenever it's put on a creature, no, whenever you cast an aura, you get to draw a card. Which in this deck is kind of a big deal because, I mean, it doesn't draw a lot of cards. And every single card that you draw, say you cast an aura, and then you draw an aura. I mean, basically, your auras are becoming cantrips. Most of the auras in here are pretty cheap. The most expensive one being 3 mana. You know, the mana curve tops out in this deck at 3 mana. So there's a lot of cheap spells in here. The Core Spirit Dancer is basically the engine that lets you keep drawing these enchantments because there's really nothing else in here that does it. You know, if you didn't have Core Spirit Dancer, basically what would happen is you would cast a Glade Cover Scout and you would put a bunch of enchantments on it and then your turn would end and you would have like 2 land left in your hand. And then depending on what you draw, you'd either have another land or another creature with nothing to enchant it. With Core Spirit Dancer, you know, yeah, you can actually think about it a little bit better. If you have him in your opening hand, you actually would want to just play a land and wait. Or play a land, play a Glade Cover Scout, and wait. And turn 2, play the Core Spirit Dancer. Turn 3 is when is the best time to go off, because then you can cast, like, you know, because you've drawn 2 extra cards now, you can cast whatever enchantments you had, and then no matter what, you're going to draw that many more enchantments. You know, so, and during this turn, both of these creatures can now attack. And Core Spirit Dancer gets boosted for every aura. So not only do you draw a card, he also gets boosted. So then, you know, who do you enchant? That depends on the enchantment. Because Core Spirit Dancer, like I said, he doesn't have Hexproof. Glade Cover Scout does. So, depending on which enchantments you have, that's gonna decide what you do. And that's why you gotta be smart about it. So, let's go over the enchantments here real quick. So first we have Ethereal Armor. Ethereal Armor costs 1 white. It's a common, And it says enchant creature. Enchanted creature gets +1/+1 for each enchantment you control and has first strike. So this one's great. Especially, you know, by a few turns in. Just because, I mean, it's pretty obvious. Every single enchantment that you have also boosts it. No matter what, though, it gives it first strike. And there's no problem with that. And that is a 4 of. Naturally. Next up is Hyena Umbra. Now, Hyena Umbra is from Rise of Eldrazi. In Rise of Eldrazi, they had this thing called Totem Armor. And basically what Totem Armor was it allowed your creature to not die. And I'll just read it to you. Totem Armor says, if enchanted creature would be destroyed, instead, remove all damage from it and destroy this aura. This aura. So, if something does happen to where your creature loses hexproof or somehow dies, or even just is blocked and dies, this thing doesn't let him die. In fact, it lets all the other enchantments remain on it, only removing this one. Which not only does this one have Totem Armor, but also says enchanted creature gets +1/+1 and has first strike. So a Hyena Umbra, because it's basically like a second life on your creature. That's a 3 of. Next up we have probably one of the more popular auras, Rancor. Oh, I love Rancor. Rancor costs 1 green. It's an uncommon. Most recently reprinted in M13. And it says, enchanted creature gets +2/+0 and has trample. Okay, so it gives them trample and a boost. But here's the best part. When Rancor is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, return Rancor to its owner's hand. So if you put a Rancor, now this is the one that you'd want to put on a Core Spirit Dancer, okay? At least to me. Because Core Spirit Dancer already gets a boost whenever he gets an aura put on him. Rancor is put on Core Spirit Dancer. Your Spirit Dancer is now a 6-2, or a 6-4. For 3 mana, he's a 6-4 with trample. That is very good. Now, granted, that does open him up even more, or it does open her up, I should say, to even more, being targeted even more to be destroyed. But even if Spirit Dancer is destroyed, which hopefully doesn't happen, you'll get the Rancor back. You can put it on something else. Next up is another card with Totem Armor. It's called Spider Umbra. This costs 1 green. It says enchant creature. Enchanted creature gets +1/+1 and has reach. So it's a lot like Hyena Umbra because it has that and Totem Armor. So it's basically identical to Hyena Umbra except it costs a green and instead of giving you first strike, it gives you reach. Which in this deck, which has absolutely no protection from flying, is not terrible. You know, giving your enchanted 7/7 with, you know, trample reach is not bad. Plus the Totem Armor. Now, these are the kind of ones that you'd want to put on, you know, one of these with Totem Armor, if you have one laying around, not a bad idea to put on a Core Spirit Dancer either, because again, most targeted creature in the deck, because it's the only targetable creature in the deck, any type of creature removal is going to be targeted at Core Spirit Dancer. So a lot of your Totem Armors, you're probably going to be want to put on Core Spirit Dancer, which is fine, because, you know, a Hyena Umbra or a Spider Umbra on, you know, a Glade Cover Scout or Slippy Boggle. Sure, it gives them +1/+1 and it gives them an evergreen ability. Whoopee-doo. If you put it on Core Spirit Dancer, it gets an additional 2/2. So, you know, not bad. Plus it's protecting it. So let's see here. What else do we have? Now, you know what I'm wondering here? What I'm thinking, if you had multiple cards with Totem Armor on a Core Spirit Dancer, if both of them would be destroyed or not. I'm thinking that they would. And bear with me, because I'm going to check this out real quick. Well, I'm glad I looked that up. Apparently, the ruling is that you choose which Totem Armor would be destroyed. Wow, that makes them even better. I mean, because if you read the card text, it literally says, if enchanted creature would be destroyed, instead remove all damage and destroy this aura. And if they both say this on it, if they both have Totem Armor, when the creature's destroyed, one would think that they would both just tap it. But apparently not. So, cool. Noted. Another enchantment in this deck is called Spirit Link. Now, I should mention, Spider Umbra was a 4 of. Spirit Link is a 1 of. And I can see why. Spirit Link, it costs 1 white. It's an uncommon from 10th edition, actually. And it says, enchant creature. Whenever enchanted creature deals damage, you gain that much life. So it just gives him lifelink. This was lifelink before it was called lifelink. Probably why the card is called Spirit Link. Yeah, I mean, I can see why this is a one-off. It doesn't boost any of your guys, but again, it's great to put on Core Spirit Dancer, because if you attack with like an 8-5 with lifelink, or, you know, not an 8-5, but like an 8-6 or whatever with lifelink, no matter what happens, you're gaining that much life, which is perfect if you're against like a burn deck. Because, you know, the burn deck can't, you know, necessarily destroy your creatures, but it can certainly sit there and kill you. So having lifelink is absolutely a good idea. But there's only one copy of it, and here's why. Because you have two other cards that do the same thing, but do more. One being Daybreak Coronet. This is a rare from Future Sight. It says, enchant creature with other aura, with another aura attached to it. So your creature already has to have an enchantment on it. Oh, that's going to be hard. It costs 2 white. So it's a little mana intensive, but it's not really. I mean, that's only compared to the rest of the enchantments in the deck. So it has to have an aura on it. But then, enchanted creature gets +3/+3. It has first strike, vigilance, and lifelink. This card would win you the game, basically. If you played this on a Core Spirit Dancer that already was enchantment, just even one more time with like a totem armor. I mean, what is that? That's like, okay, he's a 2/4/3/4+3. That'd be a 6/7 with first strike, vigilance, and lifelink. A 6/7 with first strike, vigilance, and lifelink coming at you. So you're gaining that much life every turn, 6 life, and you're, it doesn't tap to attack. Wow. Yeah. That would pretty much kill you right in the face. So yeah, that is a 4 of, naturally. Daybreak Coronet, that's a good one. And then let's see here. Is this the last one? Nope, I have 2 more enchantments. Yes, this deck is loaded with enchantments. One more here is called Spirit Mantle. Spirit Mantle is my probably favorite card from M12. Oh, I love this card. It costs 1 and a white. It's an uncommon from M12, and it says, enchanted creature. Enchanted creature gets +1/+1 and has protection from creatures. So, anytime anything tries to block this, nope, cannot block it. Anytime an ability tries to target it, nope, cannot be targeted. And this is obviously another great card to put on Core Spirit Dancer. You know, this deck should just be called Core Spirit Dancer with a little splash of hexproof. Because really, there's only like 8 cards in this deck that actually have hexproof on it. And while you want to enchant them because they are impossible to destroy, Core Spirit Dancer, a lot of the cards in here help keep that alive. You know, Spirit Mantle prevents it from being blocked by creatures or destroyed by creatures. Spider Umbra and Hyena Umbra both have totem armor, prevents it from being destroyed. And, you know, obviously they prevent the other 2 cards from being destroyed, but how many times are they being destroyed, really? Yeah, Spirit Mantle is just great. It just basically makes it unblockable, but unblockable and also can't be targeted by creature abilities. Last up, certainly not least, the card that tops our mana curve off is Unflinching Courage. Unflinching Courage costs 1, a green, and a white, and it is an uncommon from Dragon's Maze, and it says, enchant creature. Enchanted creature gets +2/+2, and has trample and lifelink. So again, another card that gives trample. And just a great combination of abilities there. So those are all the enchantments, and then the only card that's left here, ouch, the only card that's left to go over, my leg. I just went to itch my leg, and I forgot that I have a massive, like, ping-pong-sized and painful bump on my leg that, that hurts. Okay, anyways, Path to Exile is the last card that's in this deck. Costs 1 white. It's a 2 of. And it's just great removal. And I'm assuming this is in here instead of, like, Oblivion Ring, just because, again, Oblivion Ring would top the mana curve out a little bit too much. Because it costs 3. Path to Exile costs 1, so you can do it, you know, your turn 1. I don't know why you would want to do it your turn 1, but It's instant uncommon, and it says return target or remove target creature from the game. Its controller may search his or her library for a basic land card, put that card into play tapped, then shuffle his or her library. I mean, I guess if you wanted, you could target your own dudes. I mean, if you don't have any land, but yeah, you're probably not doing that. This deck only has two basic lands. That's it. So I guess if you're in a super bad pinch, well, I mean, I guess there are two copies of Path to Exile. So, you know, if you had to, let's say you get your opening hand and you have one white mana and just a plethora of amazing enchantments and a plethora of creatures, like two hexproof creatures and a pile of enchantments, and you don't have any green mana, what do? Well, you either mulligan, or you keep this hand, put the white mana out, and then cast, you know, something. Well, I guess no. I guess that wouldn't work. Yeah, because all the creatures you gotta cast for green. Never mind. Stupid idea. Stupid idea. But yeah. That's the deck. There is a pile of land, too. It's all shock lands and fetch lands and other lands. There are a couple lands in here that aren't those. I figure I could go over those real quick. Like Dryad Arbor. That is a card that is technically a creature, too. It's one of those weird ones. It's from Future Sight. It's a land creature. It's the Forest Dryad land creature. And it's a 1/1 creature, and it's a land. So, like, it's one of the most confusing and wordy cards ever. It says Dryad Arbor isn't a spell. It's affected by summoning sickness, and it has tap to add one green to your mana pool. So it gives you mana, and it doesn't cost anything, and it's green, and it's a 1/1. Like, basically, it's already an animated land. But other than that, in this deck, everything else is just standard for land. The sideboard looks pretty typical. We've got Grafdigger's Cage. We've got Rest in Peace. We even have a Torpor Orb, which is great. Leyline of Sanctity is another good one in here. Leyline of Sanctity, it's just amazing because it if you ever have a burn deck, if you're playing a burn deck, this is a card you put four back right straight into your deck because you only need one of them. It costs 2/2 white, so it would top your mana, but hear me out. It's a rare from M11 that says, if Leyline of Sanctity is in your opening hand, it's an enchantment, by the way. If Leyline of Sanctity is in your opening hand, you may begin the game with it on the battlefield, so you can play it for free. And here's what it says. You can't be the target of spells or abilities your opponents control. So, basically in a burn deck, this card causes them to scoop. Because with this, I mean, you know, if they have no creatures. And even if they have creatures, they should still even scoop because, yeah, good luck with that. This card just totally hoses them. Unless they have a way to get rid of it. Let's see here. What else is in here? Got Nature's Claim. It just says, destroy target artifact or enchantment. Its controller gains 4 life. I mean, I'm assuming that's to hose, you know, artifact decks. Another one that's probably here to host hot artifacts is Stony Silence. It costs 1 and a white. It's an enchantment, rare, that says activated abilities of artifacts can't be activated. So there's that.
So yeah, pretty standard sideboard. And I don't know, the difference between this and deck that won, or that top 8-ed.
Well, the deck that top 8-ed had one less Hyena Umbra. That looks to be the only difference. Even like the sideboard is the same. I'm supposing that there's probably one less land in here. Let's see, there's 20 lands. And in this deck, there's, yeah, one less land. So basically the only difference is they ran one less land in their deck and one less Hyena Umbra. Well, how can that be? Then they would be short. Huh, I don't know. I can't math, so. Oh, because I'm counting Dryad Arbor as a land in the other deck. Okay, that's why. Okay, ignore me. So yeah, that is the deck, and I'm going to quickly look for another one here just to see if there is any huge difference or any noticeable difference between, you know, between these, because it seems like a pretty standard list. Okay, so another good card to run in these would be the Silhanna Ledgewalker. This being just the two cost. Here, let me get it up here. Yeah, two cost, cost one and a green. It can't be blocked except by creatures with flying, and it can't be the target of spells or abilities you control. So it has hexproof, and it can't be blocked unless the creature has flying. And it's a 1-1, and it costs 2. So it costs a little bit more, but it's harder to block. It's a little more evasive. This one actually runs a different enchantment, too. What is it? Keen Sense. Okay. Oh, okay. So this is kind of like Curiosity in green, which is probably why it's in Plane Shift. Keen Sense costs 1 green. It's an enchantment that's an uncommon from Plane Shift that says Enchant Creature. Whenever enchanting creature deals damage to an opponent, you may draw a card. So yeah, it's like Curiosity, but in green. Plane Shift had a lot of ones like that. A lot of card cycles that seem like they shouldn't be in their colors, but they are. And that's why that set was awesome. But yeah, that's the only this one actually runs two less Daybreak Cornets too, because it's a little more heavy on green than it is on white. White is more like a splashed color in this particular. Yeah, let's see what else we got here. This one runs four Path to Exiles and two Keen Senses. So I mean, you know, there's a couple different ways to run this. The Ledge Walker is a good card to put in there if you want to run it a little green heavy, a little more green heavy, I guess. Keen Sense is another one that's in a lot of decks. It wasn't in this deck that was in the top 8, but hey, it's in a lot of other ones, so I mean. Well, here's one. Here's one that doesn't even run Core Spirit Dancer. Interesting, okay. So it runs 4 Glade Cover Scouts and 4 Slippery Boggles, and 2 Burrington Forge Tenders. Whoa. Okay. What? So I guess this is like a protection from. Okay, I'm just going to read it, and it says here, it costs 1 white, it's a Kithkin Wizard 1-1 with protection from red, and it says, sacrifice Burrington Forge Tender, prevent all damage a red source of your choice would deal this turn. That seems more like a sideboard card. I don't know why that would be in the main deck, because this deck doesn't draw anything, and it doesn't even have Keen Senses to draw. You know what? I'm just going to back out of this one and go. I don't know. Like, why is that in there? If somebody else knows something I don't, let me know. And I'm sure a lot of people do. Let's see here. Here's another one. And this one runs 2 Silhanna Ledgewalkers, 3 Court Spirit Dancers, 4 Slippery Boggles, and 4 Glade Cover Scouts. And 2 Noble Hierarchs. I don't know why it runs 2 Noble Hierarchs, but hey, why not? It's still just a 2-color deck. It's not like it's a like 3 colors. But okay. Noble Hierarch, of course, being the, well, I guess, you know, it has Exalted. But still, it's, okay. But Noble Hierarch costs 1 green. It's a human druid rare. It has Exalted, and you can tap it to add a green, white, or blue to your mana pool. And it is a 0/1. So I guess this card is good for, tapping for mana to cast more enchantments, I guess. And it has an Exalted, so it's boosting your other creatures when they attack alone. Which most of the time you're probably attacking alone, unless you have multiple creatures out that are enchanted. In which case, the Exalted doesn't not really help. Exalted being, whenever a creature you control attacks alone, the creature gets +1/+1 till end of turn. So, if you attack with one guy, yay, he gets a bonus. If not, darn. And this one also runs 3 Path to Exiles instead of just the 2 or the 4. And it's missing something. It's not playing Unflinching Courage. It's got 4 Ethereal Armors, 4 Hyena Umbras, 4 Rancors, 3 Spider Umbras, 4 Daybreak Coronets, and 3 Spirit Mantles. No Unflinching Courages. So this one's a little bit more creature heavy. I don't know, I kinda like the original deck list. Well, I mean, that's a couple of them. It's a good mix of them. I don't really see a massive difference between any of these, except the one that was just randomly had that one in it. I mean, I understand that it's good against red decks, that's fine, but why would you run that main board? Are you playing only red decks? I mean, if that's the case, then okay, but okay.
So yeah, that's white green hexproof. You know, it's a decent deck idea, and you know, the thing is with these more recent sets that have been coming out, like Theros and the like, it's hilarious that none of these decks have any enchantments in it, because Theros was an enchantment block, and let me just point out just how many Theros cards are in this deck. Okay, so let's see here, one. Yeah, there's none. So,
I just find it kind of interesting that, you know, there was not even a single enchantment in those decks that was good enough, cheap enough, to go into this. I mean, you'd think at least one modern playable freaking enchantment would have come out of that set. But apparently not. It's funny to me. Like, how can that be? And I guess what I was trying to say was enchantments are coming back a little bit, because, as I said a couple episodes ago, after reading that article about Doomblade and how removal has changed. There's not as much removal out there to deal with these kinds of things, so you can get away with it. Now, this deck is like that on steroids, because it has hexproof creatures or enchantments that protect. So, God, I would hate to play against this deck, just because it would kind of stack up on you, you know, like it's just like, oh, you have one Glade Cover Scout on it. Oh, and then the next turn, oh, you have a Glade Cover Scout with a Core Spirit Dancer, and you have a Spider Umbra on your Core Spirit Dancer. Oh, the next turn, holy crap, I just took 12 damage. You know, it would just like build up, you know, unless you've got blockers, of course, which, holy crap, you better hope you have blockers. So a good way to defend against this deck, I guess, is something that I don't normally talk about, would be tokens. I mean, try to get some sort of token creation so that you can just make a whole bunch of chump blockers. That way you can just hold off until you're dead. If you have burn, just burn, 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 burn. Hope that by turn three, the Burning Nation is over, and then hope the next game they don't have a Leyline of Sanctity in their opening hand. Same for game three. Because burn, I mean, if you saw Leyline of Sanctity hit the board, like, what do you do? Even if you run creatures, it's going to be difficult. So you'd almost want to have a sideboard full of, you know, creatures that you can side in. But I don't think that's really a viable strategy. If you're at a tournament, it's like, oh, my whole sideboard is just creatures. Yeah, well, do you have any hate against any other decks? Nope, just burn. Oh, okay. You don't have to fill your sideboard with creatures, though, I guess. I mean, you could just put, like, four of Dromkirk Noble or something, and then just hope that it doesn't get blocked, which it's going to get blocked. I don't know. I don't know. But anyways, so yeah, interesting deck. And, you know, looking at this, I mean, I don't have Core Spirit Dancers, but I would love to make some sort of deck like this, because that would be a lot of fun. I like decks that are cheap. I also like control decks that are expensive, though, which is kind of weird. But yeah, so that is white-green enchantments. That's pretty much all I have to say about it. So yeah, now what I'm going to do, now that we're trying this out, now that I'm done with the deck, I'm going to move on to the news. I'm going to move on to what I'm talking about. You may have noticed that I mentioned a whole bunch of about the modern deck in the top 8 modern, and I didn't really preface that at all. Here's why. Because I recorded in reverse. I recorded the news first, because this was before I decided or was informed or whatever that putting the deck on the front of the cast would be a better idea. So if that seems a little off, that's why. So in the news portion, I do talk about the modern deck lists, and I just kind of read them off. So yeah, if you notice anything kind of odd in that way, I do apologize. But next episode, I will just put the deck on the front again, and then the news will come after. And then after that, we'll go through the, you know, the mashup. And then, as I said earlier in the cast, question of the day. So we'll move on to that, and sounds like a plan to me. So we had a couple of things that have been announced. One of them, we have a new Duel Dex that is being released on February 27th of 2015. Brand spanking new Duel Deck, and it is a Planeswalker Duel Deck. And the two Planeswalkers that are facing each other are Elspeth and Kiora. Now,
this is a good one. This is one that I really, really wanted to see, just because I want the alternate art of these two cards. Kiora Crashing Wave is just an awesome card already. Elspeth is one of the staples right now. And, yeah, it's going to be great to see these two. I'm assuming it's going to be mono-white and blue-green. And, yeah, so that has been announced. And we've got quite a few months before that one's coming out. Well, actually, you know, what is it? It's November already, so December, January, February. So it's only like 3 months away. So be sure to have $20 stashed somewhere to pick one of those up. There's not much other information about that right now. It's brand new information. It's just kind of been spoiled. So it's just been spoiled that it's happening. Not really anything about it besides the fact that, hey, these are the two walkers that are in it. Oh, and I suppose I should say, Kiora the Crashing Wave, that is the Planeswalker, if you want to look that up. And then Elspeth's Sun's Champion, that is the other one that's going to be in it. I know there's been a lot of variations of Elspeth. Probably not going to be any more, considering in the storyline she technically died. But I guess we'll find out. You know, she's been kind of like the staple White Planeswalker. The thing is, there's her and there's Ajani. Ajani is technically the staple because he's, you know, he's like a lion tiger. But Elspeth has been like, how many copies is it? She said, I think, three separate Planeswalker prints, because there was just Elspeth Tyrell, and then there was Elspeth Sun's Champion, and then there was... there was another one, and I cannot remember it, and I feel like a moron. Ah, that's the one. Elspeth Tyrell, Elspeth Sun's Champion, and then Elspeth Knight Errant. Not in that order. Those are the three copies she's had. So, I mean, for technically a non-main storyline Planeswalker, you know, and when I say main storyline, I mean like Jace, Garrick, Chandra, Ajani, and what's the other one? And Liliana. Okay, that's what I mean by main storyline. For being a non-main storyline, she's had a lot of copies, and now that she's technically dead, I'm curious if they're going to bring her back in the future, maybe just leave the mono-white. Well, you know, I don't know, because the mono-white Planeswalker slot that hasn't really got anything else to replace it, because Ajani is like white-green now. The thing is, he's had so many freaking copies of him, lately, especially. Ajani, oh my goodness, he has, like how many? He's 1, 2, 3, 4, like, 5, I think 5 copies? Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. Ajani Goldmane, Ajani Steadfast, Ajani Vengeant, Ajani Color of the Pride, Ajani Mentor of Heroes, and he's been the most, like, spread around walker. He's had a white-red, a couple of mono-whites, actually, like, 3 or so mono-whites, and then 2 green-whites. He's been, like, the most versatile Planeswalker, like, out there. And I don't think he really fills the mono-white slot. So hopefully they bring her back, or they have something else. So I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But, yeah, so that's coming out February 27th. Keep an eye out for that on the shelves in 3 freaking months. Otherwise, the other news that happened... that was spoiled, is we had 2 Fate Reforged spoilers. Yes, you heard me right. Fate Reforged spoilers are already starting. And that comes out January 23rd. 23rd is when that comes out, so that's in a couple months yet, too. But we did have 2 cards spoiled, and these sets have drawn a pretty decent amount of interest just because it's supposed to be a time travel type. There's supposed to be something that's happening. Like, the first set is farther in time, and then the middle set takes us backwards in time, and then the last set is going to be all the way backwards in time on this plane. So I don't know exactly how that's going to happen, but we do have 2 cards, and I'm going to read them. The first one is called Yasova Dragonclaw, okay? It is a legendary creature, human warrior, and it is green, and... from what it looks like, it's a mythic rare. It costs 2 and a green, so 3 converted, and is a 4/2 with trample. Now here's the fun part. It says, it has something on there that it says, has card text. Haha, oh my god, a card with card text. It says, at the beginning of combat on your turn, you may pay one and hybrid blue-red, blue-red. So, two hybrid blue-reds. If you do, gain control of target creature and opponent controls with power less than Yasova Dragon Claw's power until end of turn. Untap that creature and it gains haste until end of turn. That's really wordy. I feel like they shouldn't have to say until end of turn twice. So yeah, that is Yasova Dragon Claw. And that is amazing. So I mean, I'm guessing that you'd want to pump this guy. He's a 4-2 with trample. And that just seems odd to me. I mean, why would you give a 4-2 trample? Because 2 is not enough toughness to really want to attack that much with trample. I guess, well, I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But it's an interesting card. I mean, a creature that lets you gain control of something else. And the thing is, he... what are those colors? So he's a teamer. In teamer colors, because he just costs green, but he has hybrid blue-red inside. And that makes sense because they're led by Serac Dragonclaw. This guy's name has Dragonclaw in it. Yasova Dragonclaw. So what I'm thinking is that he is one of the older leaders, you know, from years past when there were still dragons around. And the other reason, it has hybrid mana. That's another thing that's worth noting. It's not just, you know, blue and then a red. It's hybrid blue-red, blue-red. So what I'm thinking is that this is kind of when the clans are forming. Maybe this guy was the founder of the clan, of the Temur clan. But I'm not sure. I mean, this is all just kind of speculation. But my thought is that instead of having, you know, tons of multicolor cards and gold cards, there's going to be hybrid mana abilities inside of the cards, or there's going to be cards that just have hybrid mana in their casting cost. I'm not sure. That just kind of seems like something that they might do. But yeah, that's kind of just what I thought of it. Interesting card. And then there was the second card that got spoiled was called Crux of Fate. Alright, so Crux of Fate. It is a sorcery rare, okay? And it is in black. It costs 3 and 2 black. So 5 converted mana. And it says, choose one. Destroy all dragon creatures, or destroy all non-dragon creatures. That is very cool. Okay. That not only does that mean, obviously, that this set does bring back dragons to begin with, it means that a lot of what people were saying is right, that, well, obviously the third set is a dragon set, this one also has dragons. I mean, enough to merit this card being printed, obviously. But, you know, maybe not. I mean, because here's the thing. This card, it works. Now, what they said before is that Khans of Tarkir and Fate Reforged would work together, but Khans of Tarkir would not work with the third set. Would not work at all. So that is why I believe this second set for sure is going to have a lot of weird things like this, because it lets you choose. So Crux of Fate can be used with Khans in a limited style because... or in a limited format, because there are no dragons in Khans, and, you know, in the first set. So, destroy all dragon creatures, destroy all non-dragon creatures, so no matter what, it's a board wipe that works in any three of the sets. I mean, yeah. So, should be interesting. There is flavor text as well, and it says right here, Ugin's Whispered Summon led Sarkhan Vol, to the moment that would echo down the centuries and seal Tarkir's fate. The primal battle between Ugin and Nicol Bolas. Wow. That's awesome. And see, it's really confusing how this is going to work with the time travel thing. Because Sorin was there in the first set. Would he be here in the second set that is technically back in time? Or no? I don't know. I really don't know. But I assume we're going to see a card with Ugin on it. And that would be awesome. Like if Ugin got an actual card. So, those are the two spoilers that have been put out there. Should be really awesome. It's gonna be a great set. I can't wait until it comes out, but at the same time I can, because I've got a lot of other things that I have to do. I can't afford two awesome sets to come out right after another. I have other things to buy. So yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty much all I had to say about those. And then I wanted to go ahead and just take a look at Standard. Now,
Standard deck lists, and in this, the most recent Star City Games event, basically, Standard is sitting very, very nice right now. It's not absolutely annoying like it a lot of times is. A lot of times, you know, in years past when it was just four or five separate variations of Delver or three or four separate mono-black devotions. I mean, the top eight does have some decks that are, shall I say, duplicates. If you look at the grand scheme, if you look at the top 16, there's like 12 different decks in that. Standard is in a very healthy, very good place right now where you can actually get away with picking, you know, picking something and playing it and actually still standing a chance. There is no one deck that's really dominating everything right now. For a while there, it was like the aggro, you know, Jeskai aggro or, you know, just anything with Goblin Rabble Master or Brimaz in it. But now, not so much. The actual deck that took first place at this first SCG event, it was actually in Oakland, was Jeskai Heroic Combo. So the deck that I went over 2 weeks ago, the Jeskai Combo, that actually broke first place in an event in Standard. Now that was, you know, that had Jeskai Ascendancy and then a bunch of basically cantrips. You know, so it's the same basic idea. The difference is this one has heroic creatures in it. So not only are you getting the boost from, you know, Jeskai Ascendancy, but you're also getting them all boosted every single time you cast one of these cantrips. And a lot of them are enchantments. So they're getting boosted by that, untapped by Jeskai Ascendancy, and they're getting boosted by the enchantments. A lot of heroic stuff. There's actually in the top deck here that actually won, there is not a single mana dork. Everything in the creatures column either has heroic or is a Monastery Swift Spear, which has prowess. And actually Seeker of the Way is in this as well, and that has prowess too. So yeah, it's an interesting deck. I am surprised that this actually took first place. The other decks that were kind of up there were three copies of Green-Black Constellation as well, in 3rd, 7th, and 8th place. And then we had Azban Midrange in 2nd and 4th place. We had Jeskai Aggro in 5th, Temur Monsters in 6th. So there were, you know, there's still a few playsets of Goblin Rabble Master in the top 8, as there probably will be for a while until there is an actual definitive answer for it. But yeah, Jeskai Heroic Combo, we actually saw it win. And, I should point out too, in 9th place, so just shy of top 8, Boss Sly was in there on 9th place. Is basically, I mean, from what I've seen, it's interesting. Basically, it just loads the board with tokens, and Goblin Rabble Master really takes advantage of that. And then we have, you know, cards like Akron Crusader with heroic. Whenever you cast a spell that targets it, you put a 1/1 out. He only costs one to play. He got four of Monastery Swift Spears, which is really, really good card. And then this one also has Foundry Street Denizen, which is basically whenever there's another red creature that comes in, he gets 1/0. And then this one here, Fire Drinker Seder, which I completely forgot existed. It's the one cost Seder Shaman that says whenever Fire Drinker Seder is dealt damage, it deals that much damage to you. And you can boost it by paying one and a red. Fire Drinker Seder gets +1/+0 till end of turn and deals one damage to you. So you can boost him, and he's a 2/1. And then this thing is just loaded with spells, with enchantments like Dragon Mantle, Hammer Hand. And then it also has a couple burns, like Lightning Strike, Stoke the Flames. The sideboard has four Eidolon of the Great Revels, and then two Magma Sprays, four Searing Bloods. So my kind of thought is this deck, it works either way. So if the aggro, you know, creature aggro strategy is not working against a certain deck that you're against, well, then you can side out a bunch of them. Like, side out your Foundry Street Denizens, or your Fire Drinkers, put in your Eidolon of the Great Revels in its place, and then same thing with, like, the Dragon Mantles and the Hammer Hands. You could take those out, replace them with the Magma Sprays and the Searing Bloods and all that fun junk. So yeah, that just barely was shy. I mean, that's like the closest thing to red burn that I can see. It's mono red. It's just mountains. So it's actually one of the cheaper decks that you can probably play because there aren't, you know, $20 fetch lands and it's just mountains. So, but yeah, standard is looking really good. If decks like Boss Sly can just barely not make it into the top eight, you know, I like it. I like it a lot. And actually, if I'm looking at this correctly, I'm not seeing, hold off here before I say it, I don't see any copies of Treasure Cruise in the top eight for standard right now. I might be wrong, that is why I'm double checking. Nope, not a single copy of Treasure Cruise in the top eight for standard. Now, the same cannot be said for Legacy or Modern. I'm not going to dig too deeply into that, but basically, Treasure Cruise is showing up everywhere. It's in Modern, it's in Legacy, and in a lot of standard decks too, and it is almost always a four of. Treasure Cruise has really just exploded, and I know I've already talked about this several times, so I'm not going to dwell on it, but what I can tell you is this. Basically, if it's not banned soon, it's like a staple card. You know, much like Ponder and Preordain are in Legacy, or Serum Visions and Sleight of Hand are in Modern, it is now it's going to be a staple card in both, for a lot of decks. So get your copies now while they're still somewhat cheap. And I think even if they are banned, I don't know that they are banned in anything other than Modern. But who knows? See, they're already at a dollar. So, legitimately, I mean, if you look at Serum Visions, that's like a $6 card. And you look at, you know, Sleight of Hand, that's like a $5 or $7. I can't remember exactly, but they're in that range of like $5 to $7. I'm not saying Treasure Cruise is going to be that much, but I mean, if you didn't get any copies from cons, like I haven't, and literally I've not gotten a single son of a copy from cons. You know how many freaking packs of cons that I've gotten? More than what I would normally buy. Not a one copy of Treasure Cruise, and only one Monastery Swiss Sphere. Can you tell I'm a little angry? No. But yeah. So pick those up while you can, and actually, speaking of picking stuff up while you can, that kind of brings me to my next subject. I wanted to talk about standard and how it can get a little spendy. You know, especially if you're living next to a, you know, your local card game store or whatever store, and all the events they ever have are standard. You know, if you live in a smaller town, that can very well be the case, because standard is technically the easiest thing to get into, because, you know, everyone's buying the new set, so everyone has at least a slight amount, well, not everybody, I guess, I shouldn't say everybody, but the fair amount of the population are buying from the new set, so they have at least something to draw from, to make a deck. In Legacy, it is not for everybody. Modern is also getting a little expensive, and newer players that can't afford Modern or don't have old cards just laying around, they can't build Modern decks. So standard is like the default to run. Now here's the thing. Standard is not like Modern or Legacy in that when you pick up a card, let's say Goblin Rabble Master, let's say you want to build a deck with four of that. Well, that's going to cost you about $80 right now. So when you pick up four Goblin Rabble Masters, it is not akin to picking up, like, say, four copies of a Shockland. Let's say you're picking up four of Steam Vents or something. I mean, those are $10 each right now. Those are not going to probably go any lower than that. In fact, their value is going to hold, and then it's going to increase. Because unless they're reprinted again, which is not going to happen anytime soon, they're going to hold their value because they are, well, A, they're a land, and B, they're Modern and Legacy playable and standard playable when they're standard, which they are no longer. You know, land might have been a bad example, but basically just like a Modern staple land card. Like, let's say Goblin Guide. Okay. Yeah, maybe not even Goblin Guide. What's a good $20 card from standard or Modern here? Let me just think for a second. Alright, let's take Abrupt Decay, for example. That card is $12.99. I would feel more comfortable buying 10 copies of Abrupt Decay than I would feel in buying a playset of Goblin Rabble Master right now.
And here's why. Because while it might hold its value for, you know, the foreseeable standard future, which is like, what, 5 or 6 months, if that, basically it's not going to remain at $20 for long, is what I'm saying. It is not a stable price for that card because it's big in standard right now. That inflates the price. When it rotates out of standard, which I know will be a little while, it's going to drop a lot. Abrupt Decay has already rotated from standard. It has held its value, at least somewhat, at $13, and it's only going to continue to rise. Look at the foil. The foil is $100. Okay? $100 for the foil. You know, that's a lot of time how you can tell the value of a card. You look at the foil. It depends on how much the foil is over the original, and that's how you can tell that this is a card that is eternal playable. You know, Goblin Rabble Master, while it is playable in a lot of stuff, its price is being inflated by standard right now. So if you buy into four of those, you better get out while you still can, because it's not going to stay at that price, basically. After standard rotates, you're going to be sitting on four cards that you paid 80 for, and they're going to be worth maybe 20, 25 if you go buy a list. So, you know, that's the thing about standard is if you want to make a good deck, fine. But you're investing your money in something that is not going to remain that way. It's going to drop. So you have to be smart. You have to get rid of the cards while you can, and you have to not worry about it. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't want to get rid of these cards because they're so valuable right now. What if they're worth more? Trust me, they're not going to be worth more later. They're going to drop. What you have to do is buy list them, get at least 80 to 75% of your money back, and then in a year or so, when they have dropped drastically, and they will drop, just pick them back up again for, you know, 20% of what they are originally worth. That's what I've been doing. That's what works, and that's how you keep playing this game without going completely, completely broke. Standard will make you go completely broke if you aren't smart about it. So that's all I kind of wanted to say. Just basically like a warning. Don't do it. I mean, here, just for example, Goblin Rabble Master, he's $20 right now. His foil is $30. Okay? So, I mean, this would be a totally different story if his foil was worth more. But it's not. Now look at Treasure Cruise. A common copy of that, a non-foil copy, is $1. A foil copy is $25. And it's probably just going to go up a little bit more. So, very eternal playable. So I didn't want to dwell too much on that. I just kind of thought I'd bring it up because, you know, why not? Something else I wanted to kind of bring up, the thought was when Monastery Swiss Sphere came out that it would replace Goblin Guide. That it was going to, you know, help bring the price down on Goblin Guide. Because it's in the same, you know, it's the same mana cost. And it, you know, it kind of fills that same need, that same slot. Monastery Swiss Sphere, of course, being the one cost. It's a one red human monk. It's the uncommon from cons. Has haste and prowess, and it's a 1/2. Now, the reason people were saying this was going to replace Goblin Guide was because, well, like I said, it's the same price, and it doesn't help your opponent as much. But let's take a look at Goblin Guide. Goblin Guide is still at $30, and let's read him. For $30 from Zendikar, he costs one red. He is Goblin Scout rare, so he's a rare over uncommon. He has haste, and he says, whenever Goblin Guide attacks, defending player reveals the top card of his or her library. If it's a land card, that player puts it into his or her hand. So it helps your opponent, and it's a 2/2. Now, the thing about Monastery Swiss Sphere is that he is a 1/1, or she is a 1/1 true. But by turn 2, she ought to be more than that. Because you're going, you really should be casting at least 2 burn spells, or just something burn spell related. So she's going to be a 2/2. For basically from turn 2 and on, she'll be a 2/2 at least, and probably a 3/3 for most of the important turns in the game. That's why people thought, well, she would replace Goblin Guide then. Well, not really. All she's done has kind of just been added to the deck. All the burn decks that I've been kind of looking at, they still run Goblin Guides. But they also run Monastery Swiss Sphere. So, some decks, they've made room to have both.
And actually, that's kind of what I've been seeing for the most part, is that they've been having both of them in their deck. And I don't know if that's just people's reluctance to drop Goblin Guide because they had to spend a whole crap ton of money to grab him. But I feel like the price would have really, really dropped if that were the case. So I don't think Goblin Guide's going away anytime soon. I'm sure some people buy listed amount just because they decided, hey, Monastery Swift Sphere is actually playtesting very well. I don't really need it. I'm getting rid of it. That's cool. But from what it looks like, people are just running both. So, I don't know.
It's just, I know, I thought I brought that up maybe a month or so ago, right when it was spoiled, before it came out, that maybe it would be a replacement. It doesn't look like it's going to be a replacement. It's just going to be kind of added. So there's that.
And actually, something that was worth mentioning too, in Modern, now that they've actually put the places up correctly, Affinity actually came out in first place in the November 2nd November 2nd Oakland event. So Affinity actually took a victory, and then it was actually in the top 8 twice. Affinity was first and 8th. And it just beat out Teemer Midrange, and then there we had a red-blue burn, and then, of course, the white-green hexproof that was in there. That's the one that I wanted to talk about this week. But yeah, the Affinity deck, it actually won the whole thing. And it's just your run-of-the-mill Affinity deck. There's not really anything else in there that's different. The only thing that I've noticed that's different is the Ensoul artifact. Everything else, though, is just your run-of-the-mill Affinity deck. And then since I'm on the subject, I may as well say who won Legacy. I can tell you right now, Dredge. Dredge won. Yeah. Dredge won. I haven't talked about Dredge yet. I should probably do that. Just because it's one of those decks that nobody likes. The only people that like Dredge are the people playing Dredge, and the only people playing Dredge are people that hate themselves. No, I'm just kidding. Not really. I just thought that'd be funny. Yeah, so Dredge won the top, won the Legacy event. It beat out Sultai Delver, and then there was also a blue-red Delver in there, and Ad Nauseam Tendrils. And then we also had Miracles, and then we had Sneak and Show, ooh, and then we had Goblins and Lands in the top 8 as well. Not in that order. I was just kind of reading them as I found them interesting. So yeah, I figure may as well. Hey, I'll just say which one's won. If you know those decks, then good on you. If not, then, well, hopefully at some point I'll go over all of them. I have gone over a pile of these, though, like the Ad Nauseam and the Sneak and Show. Oh, so a pile. So two of them. Good job. But, yeah. And actually, yeah, I was going to say something else worth noting. In 10th and 11th place, there were two more Dredge decks, and then in 12th and 13th place, two more Delver decks. So you can see Legacy is far less healthy than Standard right now, which is just hilarious. Let's see, what else did I want to talk about? Oh, I wanted to talk about Commander. Commander 2014 coming out this Friday. I'm excited. If you are not following MTG Goldfish on Twitter, do so right now. They are awesome. And actually, they just posted an article about 2014, a financial article about Commander 2014. Basically, kind of what I was thinking. You know, and I don't want to go read the article because it's awesome. But I'm paraphrasing. Basically, this is what I was thinking before that article came out, although I was wrong slightly. My basic thought was, you know, and every single time these things come out, whether it's Commander or Plane Chase or whatever, there's always one deck that has more value in it, and that's the one that is targeted more. Apparently, Wizards is trying to avoid that this time by having the correct amount of supply. In other words, I think they know which deck is going to be picked up the most. I mean, if they're smart, they know. So they're going to ship more of that particular deck. My thought was that white and red were going to be the two decks that everybody picked up. Maybe red more so than white, because it has the Planeswalker in it that is the most playable, because he doesn't have he's splashable. You know, you can put him in a blue-red deck, blue-red artifact deck. Right now he's actually pre-ordering for $20. And then it also had Dualcaster Mage, which was, it's been exploding everywhere. Everybody really, really likes the card. Everyone that's been playtesting it is putting it in their cubes, so on and so forth. That one's pre-ordering at $15. Then you have Wormcoil Engine, that's $10. You know, so basically most of the value is in the red deck. The white deck does have some, but if you're looking at picking up any of these to flip immediately, the red deck is the one to go with. You know, don't even bother with any of the others. I mean, buy them if you want them. Don't buy them to flip them. I mean, if you want to sell a couple of cards out of that, good on you. But, you know, if you're going to buy something solely for the purpose of selling stuff out of it, the red deck's probably the only one that you're going to want to get. Read the article. I'm not going to go over all the logistics of which ones you should sell and which ones you should keep. I'm just saying read the article because it's a good one. But that is basically what I was thinking. I was planning on buying the red deck and then flipping a couple of them to pay off the deck and then holding on to a couple more to maybe get some more money off it. And I haven't decided if I'm going to eBay them or if I'm going to buy less them because I'm pretty sure I'm only going to be able to buy one if, you know, maybe two. I only have one store actually in right. Well, I technically have two stores that I can buy from, but they're both retail big box stores. So there's no telling when they're actually going to put the product out. And there's no telling who's going to get there first. There's a lot of people that work the overnight at the one particular big box store, and a lot of them I know that play Magic. So they're probably going to grab them as soon as they can. So I don't know if I'm going to even be able to get it. But we'll find out, I guess. Basically, if I see it on the shelf, I'm grabbing it and holding on for dear life. But the Commander deck lists have been spoiled, so you should go check those out because the spoilers are bonker good. Yes, bonker good. Singular form. Bonkers. Go check those out. I'm not going to go through all of it. I went through most of the new cards last week, and that's all I'm going to go through. All I'm going to say is these decks are freaking amazing. The red deck probably being the best. I mean, it's the best value-wise, but not just that. It's also just probably the better deck, right up there with the white one. The blue one, I really just want because of Reform and because of the tokens. The tokens for Reform are awesome. I really, really want it, but I'll probably just buy them online. Reform, I think, is only like $1.50 right now, and the tokens can't be much more than that, so I'll probably just pick them up that way, put it in the cube, and then be done with it. So yeah, you know what? For now, though, I think that's all I have for news. If I come up with anything else, I will push it in here somewhere.
All right, so something I wanted to mention real quick before I move on to our mashup and our question of the week. Last week, I went over a card called Myriad Landscape. Myriad Landscape is coming out in the new Commander set, you know, which is awesome. It's a pretty decent card. I read it, and I just couldn't quite grasp what it was trying to say. And I'll read it again, and I'll explain. I had a listener post on Twitter and basically explain the whole thing to me because what happened was I read it on the spot, and I'm like, hold up, what? And then I tried to look it up, and I couldn't find anything that was, you know, absolutely set in stone. And sometimes when it comes to these types of rules, I get a little screwed up. So and then I completely forgot to look it up and figure it out. So I'll read the card here. It's a land uncommon. It says Myriad Landscape enters the battlefield tapped. Tap it to add one colorless to your mana pool and pay two colorless, tap and sacrifice Myriad Landscape. Search your library for up to two basic land cards that share a land type. Put them on the battlefield tapped. Sorry, and then shuffle your library. What this means is not that you can find two different basic lands, no. What this means is that you have to find two forests, two islands, two swamps, two plains, or two mountains, not the other way around, which makes sense. I kind of thought in the back of my head that's what it was, and here's why. Because it's in, you know, it's going to be in a mono-colored pre-constructed deck. Why would they make a card and put it in there if it's going to serve for two things? So yeah, just figured I would explain that, you know, since it was so kindly explained to me. Let me just see here. Yeah, so it was from somebody who had just recently followed me on Twitter that explained it to me. So thank you very much. And actually, that same person left a mashup response. So we'll go on to that in just a second. First, I gotta go over what a mashup is. So this is the part of the episode where I do this thing that's called a mashup. What the mashup is I go to the gatherer and I hit random card. I read the card, I read the oracle and the printed texts. Then I go to the gatherer again, hit random card again. I do the exact same thing. I read the card, I read the oracle and the printed. Then we smash these two cards together, see what would happen if they were one card.
most of the time it ends up with a wordy, unappealing card that doesn't make sense to anybody. Sometimes it actually ends up being a card that makes a little bit of sense. Sometimes it's just, you know, two colors combining into one to do one thing. But, you know, it is fun. Sometimes it actually does, you know, take a couple of seconds to figure it out, and that's why I like doing it. Last week, we had Tattermunge Duo and Inner Flame Acolyte, and I will quickly read them. Tattermunge Duo costs 2 in a hybrid red-green. Goblin Warrior Shaman is a common that says, it's a 2-3, that says whenever you cast a red spell, Tattermunge Duo gets +1/+1 till end of turn. Whenever you cast a green spell, Tattermunge Duo gains Forest Walk until end of turn. Okay, and then the other one, Inner Flame Acolyte, also a common from, it was reprinted in Dual Decks, Jace vs. Chandra, but it was from Lorwyn originally. It costs 1 and 2 red. It's a 2-2, and it's a elemental shaman, so 2 shamans. And it says, when Inner Flame Acolyte comes into play, target creature gets +2/+0 and gains haste until end of turn. And it has Evoke for 1 red. Which, if you don't know what Evoke is, you may play this spell for its Evoke cost, so you can just tap 1 red to do it. But if you do, the creature is sacrificed as soon as it comes into play. So you get its ability, but you don't get the creature. Alright, so this week I actually took 2 seconds and I posted what I would do. What the mashup would be. So I gotta just go backwards a little bit. You know, cause I usually say what my mashup is in the last episode and then I completely forget by this episode. But this was basically my response. Mashup of these two. I called it Twin Acolytes. It would cost 2 and 2 hybrid green red. So, you know, 4 converted. It's a goblin shaman. When it enters the battlefield, if you used green to cast it, all creatures you control get Forest Walk until end of turn. If red was used, all creatures you control get +2/+0 until end of turn. And then it has Evoke, which is, you know, its cost. And Evoke is a hybrid green-red, and the creatures are 3-3. So that was my response to this. That way it's keeping Evoke, and, you know, it's still at least somewhat playable. It would be a good fringe playable, like, sideboard card. That's about it. Maybe. So let's see here. So here was the first response I had. It was from at Dragon7284 on Twitter. And it says here, this is the person that responded about the basic land type. So thank you for the response on that. I totally forgot to go back and go over that. Put Tattermunge Acolyte. Red-green. So I'm assuming it costs a red and a green. So just 2 mana. It's an uncommon, and it says, when Tattermunge Acolyte enters the battlefield, if red was paid, target creature gets +2/+0 and gains haste until end of turn. If green was paid, target creature gains Forest Walk until end of turn. So it's... Wow, okay. And then it also says, when Tattermunge Acolyte dies, target creature gets +1/+1 till end of turn, and you can evoke it for 1 red-green. I don't get it. I'm confused. So hold up. If I'm reading this right, the evoke cost costs more, but then you don't get to keep it. Well, if I was to change anything, I would change it to 2 and then a red-green, because the evoke cost is typically has to be lower, because you don't get the creature, basically. I'd probably go at a little higher than uncommon for all this, but, I mean, maybe not. At uncommon, I'd probably get rid of the part where when it dies, it gets +1/+1. But I do like the +2 and gains haste until end of turn. That's nice. I mean, that's the Inner Flame Acolyte, so, yeah, that's pretty neat. I assume though that the casting cost was supposed to be higher, but I don't know. Maybe I'm assuming incorrectly. But thank you. Thank you for the first time response. I tweeted back and asked if it was, you know, their first episode. He said no. Been listening for a while. Just first time response. So thank you. Thank you for taking the time this time and going out and doing the response. I appreciate it. And we did have another one too. It's going to be in my notifications, probably. Yep, there it is. And it's from at Zedgora, of course. It says, Gruul Goblin Fun, smiley face. Whoa, this looks like fun. It's called Tattermunge Pyromancer. It's a rare goblin elemental 2-2.
and it costs 2 and a hybrid red green, so 4 converted, or 4 total. And it has haste, and it says, if red was spent to cast this spell, Tattermarch Pyromancer gets +1/+1 for each red mana spent, including towards the colorless cost. Okay, so not just for the color. Okay, yeah, makes sense. If in the including part, that's in parentheses, so that I don't, you know, completely look over that. And then it says, if green was spent to cast a spell, Tattermunch Pyromancer gains Forest Walk. If red and green were spent to cast a spell, sacrifice Tattermunch Pyromancer at the beginning of your next end step. Oh, okay, because you're getting both. That's interesting. So basically, it gets rid of the whole evoke idea, but it says, hey, if you got both of these abilities, well, you just had a haster that got a big boost and had Forest Walk for one turn, now it's dead. But if you just use red, well, now you have one that's not, that doesn't have Forest Walk. Or if you just use green. Huh. Cool.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, I mean, I might make it cost one less. Just like one and then a red, green to make it a little, I mean, if you wanted to make it like stupid powerful, then you would do that. But yeah, awesome. Some good responses this week, and I just checked my email, nothing in there, so whoopee. So that's it. Now those are all the responses for this week. So thank you again for the responses, and I'm going to go ahead and hit random card, and we'll do this over again. Random card. All right. Whoa, this is a wordy card. Fertilid. Now this is originally from what looks like Morningtide. It's been reprinted a few times, once in Commander, once in Archenemy, once in Plane Chase. So it's been a big constructed reprint. Fertilid, it costs 2 and a green. It's a creature elemental common. It's a 0/0 that says Fertilid enters the battlefield with 2 1/1 counters on it. Pay 1 and a green, remove a 1/1 counter from Fertilid, and target player searches his or her library for a basic land card, puts it on the battlefield tapped, then that player shuffles his or her library. Okay, so basically it's just a land searcher that can also double as an attacker, if you wanted it to. But basically you get 2 lands out of it. Because you can do it twice. If you have 4 mana open, you can do it twice right away and kill the creature, if you want. Or you can attack with the creature, and if it goes blocked, or it goes unblocked, fine. If it gets blocked, then you respond by doing this ability twice. Or you block a creature, and then in response to it going to die, do this ability. Cool. Okay. So that's an interesting one, removing counters to do stuff. All right, so we'll hit random card again. Oh my god. Okay. Well, at least it's in the same color, kind of. This card is Mystic Genesis. This is from Gatecrash, so pretty recent. It's the only printing that it's had. It costs 2, a green, and 2 blue. It's an instant rare, and it says counter target spell. Put an XX green ooze creature token onto the battlefield where X is that spell's converted mana cost. Buh. So what I'm kind of thinking is you keep it just a counter spell instead of it being a creature. Because legitimately that creature could just be, you know, a spell that says, you know, pay 4, blah, blah, blah. The only difference being that, of course, you can use it as a creature and blocking and blah, blah, blah. But this, since it gives you a token, I'm going to keep it an instant. Counter-target spell. Put a... Okay. Counter-target spell. Put a 0/0 green insect creature token onto the battlefield with X counters on it, where X is the number of lands that you control. That would be sick. Just completely bonkers good. But the thing is, you got to counter a spell to do it. And at 2, a green and 2 blue, probably not going to be done that often. Especially not outside of limited. But still, that's, I mean, if nothing else, you can try to counter something that can't even be countered and then just go from there, and that way you get the creature. But that's probably how I would mash these together. But if you think that you would go a different direction, go ahead and do that. And I'm going to wait to give you contact information to send a response on this, because I first wanted to go over something else. So our two cards this week are Mystic Genesis and Fertilid. And I will post them to the show notes, just so you are aware. So cool. And last thing I wanted to go over this week
is the question of the week. And I'm replacing card of the week because, again, as I have said multiple times, card of the week basically is just me talking nonsense about a random card that I thought of 5 minutes ago. So instead of doing that, I'm going to actually think of a question at the beginning of the week, think it over to myself, and then ask it and see if I can get any responses. So the question is, if phasing were to be reprinted today, how would it be reworded? Okay, so phasing, I will go over what phasing is. It was only printed on 16 cards, most of them blue, and it was during like the Mirage set, so it hasn't been around for a while. And you know, there are a lot of abilities like this, a lot of abilities that are older that, you know, given time, if they were still around, maybe they'd be different. This I see the same way. Phasing is, it's kind of a wordy ability that's difficult to understand or grasp for a lot of people. There's a lot of questions that come with it. So I'll read the reminder text first. Here's what the reminder text says on a card with phasing. This phases in or out before you untap during each of your untap steps. While it's phased out, it's treated as though it does not exist. Okay, so basically, it's a keyword ability that causes them to phase in or phase out. So each turn before your untap step, it phases in or out, depending on what it is. If it's phased in right now, if it's actually in play and it's still treated as an existing card, it then phases out for the turn. The next turn, it phases back in, so you can keep using it. And you might be wondering, does that trigger battlefield abilities? Enter the battlefield abilities. No, it does not. And it does not trigger any enter the battlefield or creature abilities either. So say you have a champion of Lamb holdout that says anytime a creature comes in, you know, it gets a counter on it. No, it does not get the counter because the creature didn't enter the battlefield. It was always there. It just simply did not exist. This is why this keyword is so wordy and confusing, because the idea is there, but it isn't. A lot of things don't work with it, right? So how would this be rewarded today? I mean, you know, I don't think that it would be reprinted. I think if they were to reprint it, it would have to be reworded. You know, because, here, I'll just read a couple. I mean, this thing has tons of rulings on it. Just tons of them. Like, just for instance, if a permanent phase is in, its status changes to phased in. The game once again treats this as though as it exists. Okay? Simple enough. Next rule. The phasing event doesn't actually cause a permanent to change zones or control, even though it's treated as though it's not on the battlefield and not under control of the controller's control. Whoa, that's wordy. While it's phased out, zone change triggers don't trigger. Okay, and then it continues on. It says here, continuous effects that affect a phased out permanent may expire while that permanent is phased out. If so, they no longer affect the permanent once it's phased in. In particular, effects for as long as durations that track that permanent end when that permanent phases out because they can no longer see it. Okay, so this is where it gets confusing because some things do care if it's phased in or out. Like something that says as long as this creature is on the battlefield, it has -1/-1. Effectively, if you phase something out, it's gone now. And it says here, when a permanent phases out, here's another tricky part. When a permanent phases out, auras, equipment, or whatever attached to that permanent phase out at the same time. So all that stuff indirectly phases out as well. And then when it phases in, so does everything else. So how would this be reworded? I mean, how would this thing be changed? How would it be no longer this horrible, horrible thing that we have? It was only printed on 16 cards in one set. What if they brought it back? What if they reworded it, much like they reworded Delve? So what do you think? Let me know. And let me know what your mashup responses are, too. You can go ahead and reach me at OopsAllDex on Twitter, or you can hit me up at OopsAllDex@gmail.com. That's my email for the show. Or you can go to the Facebook group, which has not seen action for quite some time. So it's OopsAllDex MTG Facebook group. So, I mean, if you really don't have Twitter and you don't want to email me, but you have a Facebook, go ahead and Facebook me, I guess. So, yeah, that's my contact info. All the stuff will be in the show notes, so you can look up those cards, do the mashup. The question will be in the show notes as well. So how would you reword phasing, and what would you do if you had to mash these two freaking cards together, Mystic Genesis and Fertilid? I hope you enjoyed the show. A couple of little things changed this week. Hopefully you enjoyed it, and again, I do apologize if I say is worded weird because of the way that I have these recording tracks ordered. That won't be a problem next week because I will be recording the deck first.
But yeah, so thank you for tuning in. Thanks for hanging on, and thanks for listening to episode 15 of Oops All Decks, where we talked about white-green hexproof in Modern. Again, I'm at Oops All Decks if you want to follow me so that you know when the episodes are coming out. Usually it's late week, but I'm going to try to get them in at least on Fridays now, because this last one I got on Sunday, for crying out loud, mostly because it was Halloween. So I hope everyone had a safe Halloween. Nobody got in a car accident or anything, I am hoping. And yeah, that's pretty much all I got. So thanks for tuning in again. Have a great morning, evening, afternoon, wherever you're at, and drive safe.